Hello and welcome to this edition of CIPFA Speaks, the podcast for public finance professionals. My name is Mark and I will be hosting this episode, which is also our last of 2021. And what a year it's been. The public sector has continued to face huge challenges from all directions and finance professionals have had to adapt at record pace. In this end of year episode, we will take the opportunity to look both backwards and forwards. I am delighted to be joined by Kirsty Stanners, who is CIPFA's new Head of Policy and Technical, who will be talking about what her first 10 weeks at CIPFA has been like and what she thinks the future holds for local government. After that, we will hear from the editor of Public Finance magazine, Colin Mars, who will be talking about the big news stories of the last year, as well as what he thinks will be in the headlines in 2022. Finally, we will hear from Katia Lamers, who is CIPFA's International Programme Manager. She will be talking about CIPFA's exciting new public finance projects in Rwanda. So, to kick things off, I would like to introduce Kirsty Stanners, who is CIPFA's new Head of Policy and Technical. So, hi Kirsty, and welcome to not only our final podcast of 2021, but also to CIPFA. Why don't you begin by introducing yourself and telling us a little about your career so far, which has led you to CIPFA and the role of Head of Policy and Technical.
Hi Mark, thanks very much. This is now my 10th week at CIPFA and I have to say I've really enjoyed it so far. I really didn't appreciate the depth and breadth of what CIPFA offers. It's been really interesting getting to know everybody and finding out what the organisation does. I've had a bit of a varied career path to get here. I did law at university and then joined the council where I grew up, which is Scottish Borders Council, before heading to Glasgow and working at Glasgow City Council for over 10 years. And a couple of roles in different areas in social work, finance and audit, and then decided that it was time to do something different and ended up with Deloitte for a few years in their public sector and audit and advisory area. Completely different from a council, as you can imagine, but I really enjoyed the fact that you get almost thrown in at the deep end and you learn about so many different areas and really get a sense of what you can do when you're under pressure. That actually took me to Police Scotland, where Deloitte had been doing a bit of work. People might not know that Scotland's National Police Force, Police Scotland, was created in 2013 out of 9 legacy forces. So I came in at a really interesting time where the finance function was going through a huge period of change and headed up the finance business function there. It was a challenging time, but I was really proud that when we left, Police Scotland had set its first balanced budget since its creation. It kind of got to the point where, although it had been very challenging, I was kind of ready to do something new. And that was at the point where this opportunity in CIPFA came up. And as a CIPFA member and somebody who had actually been a CIPFA volunteer back when I was just newly qualified, I was really interested to come and work for the organisation. You get a sense of what it does from the outside, but actually coming in and being able to have an impact on the wider public sector rather than just one organisation was something that really appealed to me. And already, you know, after 10 weeks, I can just see the opportunities we have to have an impact and further our members' interests and just improve public financial management, not only in the UK, but also internationally.
Thanks, Kirsty. I think you've actually just answered a bit of the second question, which I was going to ask. What was it about CIPFA that attracted you? Was it its focus on the public financial sector? Or did the role offer you more scope for making a difference in the public sector and indeed within CIPFA itself?
I'm always a person that, you know, wants a challenge. And for me, this gave me an opportunity to broaden out my own expertise. My policy and technical team actually has such a range of specialisms in it, from non-domestic rates policy advice, technical accounting, social care. There are areas that I didn't expect CIPFA would have a authoritative voice around, but it does. And I'm really excited to be able to head up that team and set it up for success so that we can improve our ability to make an impact.
So these last 2 years have been quite a wild ride, to put it mildly. Obviously, the pandemic has turned the world on its head. Brexit has created its own challenges for businesses and global supply chains have almost ground to a halt. What do you think have been the main challenges that local government in particular has faced during this time? And what are the main lessons to take away?
Challenging is putting it mildly. You know, the spending pressures and reduced income that local government have faced over the last 2 years have never been experienced before. There are facilities such as libraries, museums and leisure centres which closed at the outset of the pandemic and have never opened again, obviously therefore having an impact on the income that local government can bring in. And local government has to walk a fine line between encouraging people back into town and city centres to boost the economy and keeping people safe, and that is a difficult one for them to do. As well as that, obviously, there's pent up demand. You know, when lockdown eased, many hidden problems became visible again as children went back to school. You know, older people needed social care. That pent up demand isn't going away. And it's actually getting worse because obviously we're still in the middle of this pandemic. The last couple of weeks have shown us that. You mentioned global supply chain issues. Those also impact on the public sector and local government. Things like delaying capital programmes to struggling to offer school dinner menus on a day-to-day basis. It impacts at every level of organisations, but there's still a statutory requirement to provide those services. Another area that's been a real challenge, I think across the whole of the UK, but again, something that public sector and local government have to face is recruitment. In areas such as social care and refuse collection, in particular, the issues there are stark. You can be an HGV driver and earn a lot more money than you can as a refuse collector, but the council still has to provide that service. Why would you go to the trouble of being a social care worker when you could potentially go and work in a supermarket where there's a lot less stress? That is so difficult for these organisations to manage. And even staff sickness and isolation, everything still has to continue regardless of whether the people are available, and that puts additional stress on the remaining workers. In terms of the main lessons, the thing that I think is actually a real positive from the pandemic is that local government has shown its expertise and experience is invaluable when the country's in crisis. Local government has those relationships with partners that we need in order to be able to recover, to have those joined up approaches to dealing with a pandemic and recovery. I think the ability of local government and the public sector more widely to adapt rapidly and change service delivery models has been a real positive from the last 2 years. The requirement to move to home working for those that were able to do so had to happen faster than it would have done without the pandemic, undoubtedly. It would have taken years without the pandemic. And I think probably the public sector and local government themselves were surprised at how quickly they were able to adapt. Digital ways of working have become a necessity rather than something on the to-do list. I think it's going to be interesting to see how local government now tackle the question of adapting their asset management plans in the face of this shift to mass home working. It's a once-in-generation event and it provides a real opportunity to take a fresh approach, bring burning issues like sustainability into decision making and do things more collaboratively across the wider public sector.
Thanks, Kirsty, and they are some very good points. So we've looked back, now let's look forward. What is on the horizon which you think could have a serious impact on local government and public finance professionals in 2022?
As we've seen from the last couple of weeks, the pandemic is far from over. The issues that local government and the wider public sector have faced in the last 2 years are likely to be just as acute in 2022. CITFA and the Institute for Government published the Performance Tracker report in the autumn, and it set out that despite significant extra funding the public sector as a result of the pandemic, in many areas it just hasn't been enough. There are huge backlogs in areas such as health, adult and children's social care, learning, and in the criminal justice system. And with the continuing cycle of bringing in and releasing restrictions, they're just continuing to grow. For finance professionals, supporting frontline services while trying to get quality data to quantify the scale of these issues and to make a strong case for funding is going to be a real priority.
CITFA has recently announced a really strong trading year, ending with a budget surplus for the second year running. What can we expect from CITFA in 2022? Are there any changes you are keen to push through in your department or across the organisation more broadly?
I know that for my team, 2021 has been a very busy year, and I'm sure that many of our listeners will empathise when I say that. I can see that people are ready for a break. They need downtime and to re-energise. I think that next year for us, our focus will be on continuing to engage with our stakeholders and representing the interests of our members, contributing to debates and shaping events, which is what CITFA does really well. In terms of my own personal priorities, I'm very aware that it's been a stressful couple of years, so the well-being of my team and setting them up for success is really important since I've come into a new role. So I'll be looking to my team to make sure that there are no single points of failure. We can support our members and our stakeholders We've set up some new forums that are subject-based rather than industry-based, so I'll be really interested to hear what the people on those forums have to say and how we can feed that back into the work that CITFA does to make sure that our message reflects the requirements of those who are working in the public sector that we support.
Finally, what's been the best or most surprising thing about CITFA since you started?
I think I'm a people person, so what I've really enjoyed is just how many people I've met from different sectors. Although I've got a fairly broad public sector background myself, it's been so interesting hearing from people in councils, health boards and central government about the challenges they're facing and the amazing solutions that they're coming up with to try to tackle those. And also within CITFA, you don't appreciate the amount of effort goes in terms of things like our professional qualification, which is being relaunched next year. I've seen so many passionate and committed people, and I think that it's clear to me that that is what's contributed to CITFA's success. And I'm really pleased that I'm now part of that team and able to contribute to that success too.
Thanks for your time, Kirsty, and I'm sure our listeners will be hearing much more from you in the coming year. Next, we speak to Colin Mars, who is the editor of Public Finance magazine, who is in conversation with Ursula Dale.
Thank you so much for joining us on today's show, Colin.
Thanks for having me.
So let's get started with the questions. For you, what were some of the most pressing public finance issues that you wrote about as an editor in 2021?
Right, yes. Good question. Well, obviously, COVID-19 was the big one that provided context for pretty much everything we wrote about during 2021. And obviously, public finance staff have been on their toes with numerous challenges, distributing government grants and dealing with some pretty big drops in income from things like car parking and leisure centres. So that's obviously been the big one. And if you take the sector as a whole, councils look like they've been compensated pretty well as a sector by central government overall. But within that, obviously, you know, there's some big differences between councils, with the numbers saying they're not being adequately compensated, and clearly there are going to be long-lasting issues that the grant don't deal with. I think one of the most interesting spin-offs from the COVID-19 story that we follow quite closely relates to estate management of local authorities, and obviously due to the rise in home or hybrid working, a number of councils have looked at their offices and come to the conclusion they can, you know, both get a capital receipt and save ongoing revenue costs by getting rid of large chunks of office space. So you can kind of see the logic behind that strategy at the moment, but obviously it'd be interesting to see how that progresses and if that strategy works out in the longer term. There's been a number of issues outside COVID relating to the sustainability of public finances. We had seven authorities granted capitalisation directions by central government during the year, which gives them the ability to use capital money on revenue spending. I think most of those were due to issues outside of COVID-19. You could argue that Luton, which was granted one, was very much COVID related due to the big drop in income that hit it over its local airport. But there are lots of other issues in the sector, obviously relating to sustainability, losses on standalone companies, impact of cyber attacks, and other problems related to financial management. There's been a lot of focus on fraud and error in COVID-19 era over the funding provided by government to businesses. So that's been a really interesting area for us. Obviously, the aim was to get as much money out of the door as quickly as possible, prevent the economy from collapsing, but inevitably there were some mistakes and some of the normal procedures were streamlined that helped make fraud a bit easier for criminals. So that's been interesting. And I think recently Jim Haar, the head of the HMRC, said that it was unlikely that his department was going to recoup more than half of the $5.8 billion it paid out or due to fraud from the three support schemes it had administered. But a big one's been Levelling Up, which I think everybody is either very excited about seeing the white paper or sick to death of. It's a buzzword that was actually incorporated into the name of the Communities Department this year at the expense of local government. The wording local government came out of the department's name, which caused a bit of upset in some quarters. And in terms of Levelling Up, there's been a lot of debate about what that means. Seems pretty much as though it's a continuation of kind of government regional policy going back many decades to try and ensure prosperity is not just concentrated in the southeast of England. So it's a massive structural problem. As I say, lots of governments try to deal with that. I think that was the idea of the regional development agencies under New Labour, and regional policy goes probably right back to the 1930s. So we'll have to see whether the levelling up white paper, whether it's up to the task of solving such a big structural problem. Certainly many people saw there's a scaling back of HS2 proposals a month or so ago as a sign that the Treasury doesn't really have the appetite to spend huge amounts of money on this, and particularly at a time where it's uncertain where the economy is going. Another huge story this year was the government's announcement of the health and social care levy, which is a 1.5 percentage point rise in national insurance, which is the tax that's paid by working people. That will be used first of all to help the NHS deal with COVID backlogs, and then the idea is that from 2023 that money will fund the cap on personal care costs of 86,000 from October 23. That of course doesn't completely fix the social care problem, as there was no mention of extra funding for local authorities to address existing strains in the system. And then finally, of course, we can't ignore the big debate that's gone on this year about revisions to the Prudential Code, which SIPF has been running. The final version of that is due out next week, so I need to sort of caveat my remarks with the fact that the text could change. But in a nutshell, it's set to create three categories of investment by local authorities: those for short-term treasury management purposes, those that are necessary for service delivery and regeneration, and thirdly, those for commercial purposes to raise a yield for services. The code is likely to say councils should not borrow money for the third category. I think the idea behind the code really is just going back to the first principle that it's not really appropriate to risk money by borrowing in order just to risk it in that way. A lot's happened this year, so those are some of the main ones I can see.
You've mentioned a few important policy documents like the white paper and the Prudential Code that are coming up in the new year or later this year. Is there anything in particular you're going to have your eye out for in the world of public finance going into 2022?
Yeah, well, I mean, the COVID's likely to continue to dominate the backdrop for everything that's happening in the world of public finance again in 2022. At the end of this year, some of their support packages began to run out, so it'll be interesting following how that develops. And the government, you know, there was a slight decoupling of the restrictions on society from the compensation packages that it was offering. People currently being told to work from home, but there was no extra compensation made available for town centre businesses that might rely on office workers coming in. But it sounds as though, you know, if we did go into lockdown again, the Treasury might intervene with extra money. So we'll be keeping a firm eye on all that and all the economic indicators, because obviously the impact of public finances will depend on whether we get over the Omicron variant fairly quickly. If we don't, then Rishi Sunak might be looking to borrow significant amounts of cash again that he wasn't counting on in his budget calculations. So obviously the next budget, or the next two budgets this year, will be very interesting in terms of the direction that we're headed in. As you mentioned, you know, levelling up white paper finally due after a couple of delays. And there was a bit of excitement in the last week or so after the Independent was leaked a draft of the paper, which said that, you know, the government was considering creating a single tier government structure across of all of England, which would be a massive move. We don't really know how likely it is that that's going to make it into the final version. And, you know, occasionally governments have been known to float ideas to see what reactions were, so it could have been some clever management of that policy, but we don't know. It would certainly be a huge move if it happened, and, you know, there'd be big implications for all staff at local authorities. It would be likely to be a huge slimming down of staff numbers, but because of that, I guess there's going to be a huge amount of resistance to the idea. Other ideas in that white paper might involve further devolution deals to counties, abolition of the local enterprise partnerships, investments in broadband and 4G, along with training, and this idea that there might be some kind of star chamber to judge policies against the levelling up agenda from all different departments. But it'll certainly be interesting to see. There'll be reforms to NHS funding at the start of 2022. Integrated care boards, of which local authorities are part, will get much more say over the allocation of funding. So it'll be interesting to see whether that helped get over this long-standing issue of split between health and social care. That's the idea. We'll see. Hopefully things will get better there. And then, you know, as we've said, we've got the Prudential Code going live. So that's a soft launch initially in April 2022 to give people a chance to get used to that regime before it becomes formally effective next year. Technical things like the introduction of IFRS 16, which is basically rationalising the way that leases are accounted for in public authority account. The idea is that the effect will be neutral overall, but it's likely to be quite a lot of work for public sector accountants doing all that stuff. But fortunately, they've had plenty of time to prepare for that after its original introduction was delayed by COVID. I guess those will be the main things.
That's really interesting. I definitely think you've given our listeners a good summary of things to look out for going into the new year. You mentioned a lot there about the impact of COVID-19 on public finances and local authorities, but I was just wondering for you if you'd noticed any changes to the news cycle and how working in the 2021 news cycle in particular has been different to you from other years.
Well, I guess along with everybody else, we've been dealing with a constantly changing situation. As a journalist, you're always having to look out for the unexpected, the shocks, and, you know, react to those quickly. That's, you know, that's a major part of the job. But obviously this year we're operating in an environment, not least because the viruses expand exponentially, that this situations change very, very quickly, and governments have to step in and adjust their approaches very quickly. We're seeing that at the moment with the Omicron variant. You know, just as we thought we were on a gradual trajectory out of the pandemic, things look very different. So that's the challenge. That's also the case at the macro level. Of course, at the start of the year, we were reporting on the prospects for negative interest rate to help boost the recovery. Bank of England had done preparatory work on that, and it seemed like a reasonable expectation that rates might go below zero sometime this year. But within months, inflation had raised its head, and then now it seemed a rise is more likely. So that was a really fast turnaround there. And, you know, indeed, New Zealand and some other countries have already raised their rates. Whether Omicron changes that picture again, who knows? Could be looking at January having a very different economic situation, so inflation might be dampened by that. So that's been a real challenge, just keeping up with what is the current situation. I guess outside of COVID, the Johnson government made a few announcements, started laying out its territory properly with some big announcements. I mean, Johnson had barely been elected before the pandemic hit, so some of the government's major announcements were either pushed back or abandoned. But so this year we've seen some, you know, major strategies on rail, health, social care, and we're expecting them levelling up news in January. Remains to be seen how radical that will be. And of course, you know, the budget showed Rishi Sunak increasing taxes, which might be a sign of a change in approach by the government. It could just be a reaction to COVID and might not have happened without that. But certainly seems like this year's been a case of seeing how the government is changing its approach over, you know, both the May and the Cameron government.
So you've mentioned broader changes that COVID-19 has created in the news cycle. I was just wondering if there were any specific challenges in your day-to-day working life as a journalist that were created by COVID-19.
Yeah. I mean, this has been the second year of remote working for us. We've had a bit of time in the office this year, which was great after such a long time away. But mostly we've just been producing the magazine and website from our homes. So, you know, some of the challenges with that are the same as in any job. It's more challenging communicating effectively when you've got to pick up the phone or have a Zoom chat rather than just shouting across to the next desk. Particularly last winter, of course, you know, we were in lockdown and the weather was particularly grey and miserable. I think everybody's mood was pretty low at that point, so that was really challenging not to have other people around then. In other ways, I think home working has been beneficial. I've often said I'm more productive when there are fewer distractions in the office. You obviously lose a lot through not having that cliche water cooler moment, but, you know, when you're with colleagues and you're getting to know people in the office, maintaining relationships, that's really helpful. And sometimes things get lost in translation in emails if you don't have that grounding of a personal relationship that you've built up face to face. But I've got used to marking out changes on proofs that I get for the magazine in PDF format, whereas we used to print them out and write it, which was obviously not particularly sustainable. And with my messy handwriting, I think the sub-editors have appreciated getting typed comments on proofs, and probably I don't think I'll go back to paper proofs now. Got used to new ways of working. There's been fewer events. I was lucky enough to go to a limited number at the end of the summer, including the Public Finance Awards, which we ran with ITFA, which was great to see people from the sector together. And there were a couple of other ceremonies where Public Finance picked up some awards for its work and also made it to a tip for Treasury Management Conference. So things like that are really valuable for a journalist. It's obviously much harder to network and pick up on what's happening in all corners of the sector when you're not people working. So that's been a bit tough, but you can still do the job. There are still press releases and you can call people up on the phone and have chats with them, and there's still council agendas. In some ways, it's been more transparent because a lot of councils, certainly in the early part of the year, were holding meetings on Zoom or on YouTube, so you could actually see what was going on in some of these discussions without having to live in the wilds of Cornwall, for instance. You could just go online and see what a finance committee was talking about there. So in that sense, that's been easier. Sometimes it's harder to get through to people on the phone. If they're working from home, you might call their office number that's on the internet and it rings out and goes to an answer phone. And if you're trying to chase up on an email, then it's sometimes more difficult to get through to people. But overall, you know, I think I've been surprised at how well teams adapted to home working. So, you know, going into 2022, it's a very interesting time for the sector, and it's a great time to be working on a magazine like Public Finance. I know everybody's working harder than they normally have to. There are lots of interesting things happening, and hopefully we start coming through this crisis out the other side and we get some announcements that local government back on a firmer footing than it has been in recent years.
Well, that's wonderful to hear, and nice to end the show on a highlight. So thank you so much for joining me today, Colin.
Thanks for having me.
That was Colin Mars, who is the editor of Public Finance magazine. Finally, I would like to introduce Katia Lamers, who is SIPFA's International Programme Manager, who will be talking about SIPFA's exciting new public finance exam they're developing for the Institute of Certified Public Accountants Rwanda. Hello, Katia. Would you like to introduce yourself and tell us about what you do at SIPFA?
Of course. Hello, everyone. My name is Katia Lamers, and I'm the program manager at SIPFA for the International Advisory Projects. And these projects mainly concern donor-funded projects in countries around the globe and in the public financial management sphere. I'm involved in both the preparation of bids as well as the implementation of the awarded projects.
Great, thank you. And you and your team are about to be involved in a project in Rwanda, working alongside ICPAR, which is the Institute of Certified Public Accountants Rwanda. Can you talk about the organisation and what you will be doing exactly?
Yeah, of course. ICPAR is responsible for the regulation of the accountancy profession in Rwanda, and they are responsible for the admission of the new members into the institute and the registration and granting of practicing certificates to certified public accountants. On top of that, they are also responsible for monitoring compliance with professional standards, the investigation and discipline of its members, and the delivery of accounting qualifications, programs, and examinations. And ICPAR has set itself as a strategic objective to strengthen the qualification framework and its ambition. So the ambition of ICPAR is to make the qualification much sought after. In that regard, ICPAR would like to offer a certificate in PFM to cater for non-certified accountants or those individuals that completed their professional qualifications before the introduction of the PFM pathways in CAT and CPA qualifications. So in this context, SIPFA will be supporting ICPAR to develop a computer-based exam certificate in public financial management. And this responds to the market needs and provides a practical and broad-based knowledge of public financial management in general.
That sounds really interesting. And how did this project come about? Did ICPAR approach SIPFA?
Yes, that's correct. So we were invited for this project by ICPAR to submit a proposal. And with us, probably several other organizations were invited to bid as well. But we were approached by them directly to submit a bid for this.
As with many African countries, Rwanda's public sector is still struggling to achieve its full potential, which is largely down to the failure to attract competent and adequately trained finance officers. What value do you think SIPFA's involvement can bring to the country's public finance department?
Well, so SIPFA is well known for its reputation and experience in developing and running computer-based accountancy qualifications and assessments. So as we have so much experience developing professional certificates in PFM, we were in the best position to assist ICPAR, according to ourselves and to ICPAR as well, apparently.
Well, that's good to hear. The government of Rwanda has introduced several initiatives and strategies as a way of improving effective public financial management. What do you know about these? And do you think that they have had a real-world effect so far?
So this has been done through the implementation of various public financial management strategies and plans over the past years. And these were funded by several donors like the World Bank. So this modernization of the existing financial sector, its institutions and regulatory frameworks helped position Kigali as the capital, as a preferred finance hub on the African continent. So it had a real effect, yes.
Will you be going to visit Rwanda, or will the project be delivered remotely? And if so, what do you think are the main challenges in delivering such a project online?
Yeah, so hopefully I will get a chance soon to visit the project and to travel there with our consultants. But for the moment, the project is implemented remotely due to the pandemic. But we hope to be able to travel out in the new year, because it's always better to be in country and to speak directly with stakeholders. It's much more efficient and faster that way. And answering an email can take so long. And when you're just speaking to someone directly, it all goes more smoothly. So we hope to be able to go out there soon. But online delivery, I would say, has also proven to have many advantages. And it creates stronger bonds between the parties involved, because you're much more connected all the time. So it has also proven to be very successful.
Great, sounds really exciting. Finally, how do you think the relationship between SIPFA and Rwanda will develop, and what's next for your team?
Well, I hope that this, of course, is the start of a long-lasting relationship, and that we can keep being part of the amazing developments that Rwanda has been going through recently. And at the moment, what we're working on, we're gearing up a few projects that are in the forecast. And we are in the middle of preparing a bid for the Auditor General's Office of Pakistan, where we hope to be training officers in our IPFM qualification and officers in the performance audits.
That was Katia Lamers talking about SIPFA's new international projects. That brings this final episode of 2021 to a close. But we will be back early in the new year with more guests, questions, and things that public finance professionals need to know about. From everyone at SIPFA, we wish you all a very happy holiday and new year, and we'll see you all in 2022. Thanks for listening.